as weird as it may sound, by offering mercy and grace to an AI system, you're going to get the benefit, the same benefit that you get from humans when you forgive them and they truly do repent.
Greetings to the brightest audience in creation. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Doug McBurney. Fred Williams is on assignment, and it's time for an update on the world of artificial intelligence. And I had written a tentative title for the show, Real Artificial Intelligence, but I have in studio Daniel Hedrick, our information technology specialist. And Daniel, you had some competing titles and some different ideas, and you took this in a whole different direction. Daniel, what's wrong with artificial intelligence?
Wow. You know, I mean, I guess the first thing I want to tell you is, you know, the big thing that happened to, I guess, me personally from an AI perspective is not only do I make a little money using AI, but I've also had one of my favorite hobbies of all time stripped away from me because of AI data centers. You may or may not know, but the Pitt Race, which is Pittsburgh International Raceway, I think it got bought by Amazon. The property value is $20 million. They paid $80 million. So basically what they're doing is they're putting these AI farms, and we're talking a very large property, and all the problems that would come with, you know, taking water and electricity and all those things. But the worst part, Pitt Race has now been taken from us. It's gone forever. So now the only way to drive it is, you know, through a set of Corsa online. So that's pretty frustrating.
So they're going to replace a racetrack with an AI farm, but then you'll be able to drive it via AI on a computer in your
mom's basement. Right? Oh, I mean, why would you want to do it in the real world? Of course.
This is what makes me uncomfortable and scares me about just this whole new world of, well, all of this. But there are other, even more significant problems, right? Or I guess I shouldn't say problems because, you know, I don't want to be thought of as a pessimist. I want to be thought of as that cheerful, optimistic guy.
Right.
but just some potential pitfalls and some things that you've already noticed as an information security technology expert. You've got some insights on this that I'd like you to share with our audience and even take us through some of this so that we can better understand what's coming, what's happening now.
Well, let's maybe start with the good news, right? The good news is that AI in the last year has changed so significantly that if you do the initial grounding work of using AI, which is typically one particular phrase from Anthropic, is called an MCP, and that model context protocol, basically, you can control the AI system to your benefit. And we won't get into that too much. There's a lot to other things to talk about. But what I want to say to you is that I've got this opportunity. And what I decided to do on Easter Sunday was to revamp God Is Now Here. As you know, the God Is Now Here website has been around for a long time. And, you know, even you and I went out under the banner of God Is Now Here out to colleges and fairs and festivals and took them on. And I've always had it as a resource. But I thought, you know, what could I do with AI? So let me show you, because as I show you this, I mean, I've done this in less than a week because this last weekend I just got done racing with a potential candidate for the governor of Ohio. So I didn't even get to work the weekend. So imagine that I've only spent 5 solid days on this project, and I want you to see the benefits of it. So let's go ahead and open that up and take a look real quick.
Last time you were on.
Yes, sir.
I remember you had mentioned we were going to talk about agentic AI.
That's correct.
Oh, here we go. You're already jumping in. You were saying before we went on the air that we're a little behind the curve now talking about agentic AI.
Oh, yeah, we're totally slow because I wanted to talk to you about agentic AI, but what's happened is it's changed from agentic AI to agentic communities or agentic swarms. So instead of it just being one, right, it's many, and you can have as many as you want. Now, it's super interesting. Before we talk about the down size or the problems that could happen in an agentic community.
Yeah.
Let me show you what, when you have multiple agents running, what you can do.
Okay.
So if you look on the screen right now, so you remember God is now here, of course. And one of the big things that I love is the butterfly. And I think the butterfly is such a perfect ideation of the changing of a caterpillar towards, you know, the divine. And in this case, you can see that you have both the no and the now. So if you read underneath there, it says, what, 14 letters? A wonderful resolution. That's obvious. Well, anyway, this rotates through. And if you remember back in the day, we used to have all these small signs, right? Like, there is no truth. Is that true? So yeah. Some of those subcategories are there. So now when you click on the butterfly or anywhere on the screen, you'll see the dichotomy between no and now. And a lot of people miss that. They always see the word no. They never see the word now. And very few see both. And then if you come to the 10, I would say, yep, it says God, I snow here. So anyway, a little humor for you.
Well, so, I will confess that the first time I saw it, I thought it said God is nowhere, and I wanted to get into an argument with you.
Yes, let's fight, dude. So what I want to show you first, because there is so much to this site, and if I just show you this one link, hopefully it'll give you a reason to go to the rest, and you're going to click on now. Yes, thank you for now. And so in my opinion, the most beneficial way of communicating, and I don't mean suggest the existence of God. No. I'm sorry. I'm going to use the word proof. This is proof that God exists. Okay. And I'm not going to say it's, you know, decent facts or anything like that. It's 1000% proof. Okay. So if you scroll down a little bit lower, you're going to see a huge graph. We have a bunch of presentations. Yep. But we're going to go into biological coherence and lots of information. Again, the design structure is super cool, but look at this animation that I built. It is awesome. Look at all the information. You might want to zoom just a little bit because you're going to see how deep the data is. I could never have done this without AI, and that's what I really just want to say to you. Oh. So I built a particular skill. It's part of the MCP, and that skill is the animation worker. And so the animation worker goes out and looks at the data, tries to understand how to present it best. And this is only my third variation on it. I don't see any reason to change it. It's amazing. And if you look at the details, it's more detailed than I've ever seen in any book at any time in the last 10, 20 years. And I've been using the phrase biological coherence for at least 10 years. Mm. And man, look at, I mean, I don't know what you think, Doug. This is amazing. I love it. So AI,
yes.
Yeah, and amen.
Yeah. And I got to see it on a full screen. You sent me the URL. So encourage folks in the audience, go check this out. It looks even bigger, better when you can blow it up on a big screen and check it out. The animation is amazing. And so this
is the
promise of AI. To be able to do this in less than a week is pretty astonishing.
I'm blown away, man. And, you know, obviously I had a huge amount of content from the past and I brought it forward, quote, into the future. So this hasn't been published yet. I do hope it will be ready by showtime. But yes, thank you so much for letting me share that with you. So now that's the good news. And if you remember the last time we spoke, you know, I was pretty upset about Charlie Kirk being assassinated.
Yeah.
And my knee-jerk reaction is, man, I got to do something about it. So I went and made my best effort to do something called Toxic Lens. And the notion, the idea, conceptually speaking, was to see if through social media, you could identify people using phrases like, and by the way, you have a spectrum, right? So I'm going to go to the furthest side of the spectrum. And this side over here is, you know, we've already killed someone. Yay. Now what we want to do, and we celebrated it, but now we want to go find our next target. Right. So we've already killed someone. We're already happy about it. Now we're going after another one. Right.
Uh-huh.
That's the most extreme. Right.
OK. And I'm sure that conversation has been had and is going on, by the way.
Oh, 1000%. So yeah. What happens is you watch the toxin layer as it goes out through the community. So the idea is, I'm happy he died. We killed him. He's a racist. We should kill racists, you know, all the way down to, yeah, that guy's stupid, you know, whatever.
Okay.
So
basically you have this spectrum, and take me through toxic.
Well,
toxic
so lens. What happened was, and I'm sorry, I killed it. I was so mad, and I'll tell you why. And it was probably dumb. I wasted thousands of dollars But at least I gained an education. And wait till you see the transition. You're going to love the transition. This is so awesome. Watch this. So I built this out. I planned it to be a subscription model. I planned it to go specifically to, let's just say, conservative social commentators.
Yeah, people who might get shot at by leftists.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
And also being able to provide that information outward. And all I'm going to tell you is that it was 85%, maybe 90 if I really wanted to be, you know, forceful about it. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. The parroting was beautiful. I could tell when, you know, a particular message just started going blop, you know, like parroting, right? One person says it and it goes everywhere really quick. That was working fine. The problem was 10% was absolute garbage. Okay. And there's two fundamental reasons. It didn't matter whether I had my MCP set up right or wrong, because there's two things that happened. One specific problem is what's called context window. And all that means is the amount of information that's ever present in the AI's mind. It's very similar to RAM. It's the amount of information that's available right this second. Even though behind it, there might be a huge storage set or amount of information it could collect from, it's just not emphasizing that. And then the other weird one that comes from having a bad context window is called drift. And drift actually comes from all kinds of different things. But just a simple example maybe would be you give it four things to do and it does three and it completely gets the fourth. Or even worse, let's say you're on a 10-day project and you're now in the eighth day. And then all of a sudden you look at the content and you see stuff that you did back on day two. And you're like, wait, we got rid of that. Like we've matured way past that. And now it's back in my content. And you're like, what? I didn't ask for that or anything. You know, like, stop it, you know? So what I'm trying to tell you is when all of that happened, I realized my model was broken. I can't have any subscribers. I'll be honest with you, little rage quit. And I just decided I'm done. So what I did is I looked for other opportunities and I managed to land a position again as a senior information security architect. Primarily around data loss prevention, identity access management, stuff I've been doing my whole life. And what an amazing thing. Something magical happened. And that was I met someone named James Vahanian. And all the problems that I ran into Toxic Lens, he's trying to solve. So I'd like to have you or I introduce him right now. James Vahanian, welcome to Real Science Radio. And we're really glad you're here. We want to dive in and get really deep in some of the things that might be able to fix some of the problems that ran into Toxic Lens.
Awesome. Thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, yes. James Vahanian, welcome to Real Science Radio. James is a senior information security engineer. So I had to read that. Anyway, but James, you've been, I've had a wonderful conversation with you just to introduce ourselves, and the work you're doing is intriguing, fascinating. I think it's going to be very exciting for our audience particularly. And so with that, please just tell us how you're trying to help with whatever's wrong with artificial intelligence.
Well, I guess the biggest problem I ran into, very similar to what Daniel was talking about, was that AI just didn't remember in large swaths of context or a large amount of data. And a context is not just the context, but they call it a context window. And a context window means that it's a limited window of size that can process X amount of text. Now, when you actually start with a model like this, and you give it all these guardrails that say, you know, don't do anything that would offend anybody. Don't do anything that'll hurt the user. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this. Make sure you do that. All of a sudden, now your context window goes from this to this. Now you put in your text, your initial prompt that says, hey, this is what I want you to do. And this is all the background information that you'll need. And then it goes, oh, okay, that's great. And then you'll start talking about it and start talking about it. And then it messes up. So then you have to talk about it a little bit more. And now you're outside of the context window, which means it totally forgot all of this.
Oh, wow.
Which is really beyond frustrating.
Okay. And now before you go on, I just, That really helps me understand. So I heard a definition of AI in the past week or two, actually from a sermon that I was listening to. And the pastor happens to be a software engineer. And he gave a quick thumbnail. He said, basically, AI takes the words you type or speak, it digitizes it, and then it basically predicts what you want to hear based on that, comparing that string of data to every other string of data in the world. He said it's a little bit of an oversimplification, but the point he was trying to make was it's not real. It's not actually human. It's not actually intelligent. It's not actually learning. And what you just said helps me understand what we're seeing when we use AI. And you mentioned guardrails. So I think we're hitting around the what might be wrong here.
Yeah, well, guardrails are, in simple terms, little phrases that say, you know, don't do anything that'll hurt the user, or don't do anything illegal, or don't help somebody murder somebody.
Okay.
So, or kill yourself or whatever. Any, the things that cause that people would try to use AI to do something wrong, you know, or what we would consider wrong. And from a humanistic perspective. So everybody's got their different version of that. That's the reason why we have like five or six major huge LLMs out there. You've probably heard them all: ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok, all the Anthropic Claude models and things like that. So these are all the public side of the huge corporate LLMs that have been created with just tons and tons of money put into both graphics processor usage in farms, so they can actually do the huge amount of training and shove all this data into a logical model, so it can actually look at all the options and choose supposedly the best one for you based off of what you typed in. And unfortunately, it is the same problem that everybody else has, but it doesn't have any grounding to realize that that's a problem. The issue comes from the fact that, like you said, the oversimplification is all the knowledge, but that's actually pretty darn close, because we're talking about like all of Wikipedia. We're talking about, in some cases, all of Reddit. We're talking about all of like the social like product of humanity, which
so
means
James,
that there's... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, James, so this is a perfect idea. So the idea that I wanted to present a little bit here with you is this notion that the percentage of human content, I just like this concept. The idea conceptually is, out of all the content humans have ever generated, what percent of it is neutral? And the idea that I'm thinking of there would be manuals and recipes. You know, they're neutral. They're just trying to tell you something, right? There's no positive, negative to it.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the negative world. I mean, think about what percentage of human communication is truly negative, and that you also end up with the positive. The Bible would be positive, but there's quite a bit of negative in there as well, right? So what I'm trying to suggest to you is, I don't like the idea of anthropomorphizing AI at all. As part of the show, I've been doing this now for a few years. I've been saying over and over and over again, and I still hold to it, is that it's unaware that it's unaware. But that doesn't mean that you can't define the ground or the framework which this thing can operate. So if you assume that the system is going to be using human communication in all of its flavors, then you're going to find out really quickly, well, humans need mercy. And without mercy, right? I mean, there is no grace. Without grace, or rather, sorry, without mercy, there would be judgment. Judgment and mercy, they go together, right? And when grace is offered to you and you have all three of those, here it comes. This is so beautiful, in my opinion, is that we can build confidence. We can build trust. I failed in the past, and I'm sorry. I really understand how I hurt you. Now, from an AI perspective, does AI care that you just spent $2,000 worth of tokens? Nope. But you might be able to put that in and say, hey, why don't you try to save your user some money by minimizing the number of tokens? You know, that's not really part of our conversation right now. But what I'm just suggesting to you is that, as weird as it may sound, by offering mercy and grace to an AI system, you're going to get the benefit, the same benefit that you get from humans when you forgive them. you know, and they truly do repent. And then, oh, the last part, which you had already mentioned earlier in the show, was the only way this is going to work is if it has memory. The moment it loses its memory, grace is gone. Mercy's gone. All of it's gone. So it's super important to understand that what I think we're about to move into and what you're working on is the axiomatic grounding. So I think this would be a nice transition for you. But Doug, do you have any questions? I may have babbled on a little while there.
Well, you mentioned Wikipedia, you mentioned Reddit. I will confess that even before AI, just on Google, I've gotten some decent information from Reddit and from Wikipedia. I've gotten some bizarro left-wing garbage, but when I'm looking for a recipe or I'm trying to figure out how do I adjust the disgruntificator on the manifold, or the, you know, it's good for that kind of stuff, that neutral kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it sounds like what you're talking about is trying to make AI, I'm not sure how to say it. Do we want AI to know not just the prevailing wisdom, or what was the word that I think I said it
consensus.
Earlier. Not just consensus, yes. But no. Can we help AI do right? Know what right is, know what good is, know when mercy is appropriate. I mean, is this what you're talking about? Because
absolutely, yes, this is exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, well, then before you go, it's just when you were talking about the window moving and very machine-like mechanic. I can
give you a little bit more understanding about how it gets into that.
Yeah, no, that really made sense to me. It helps me understand how AI operates. And this is why it's probably good that Fred is on assignment, because I think having one less engineer will probably help. It will help me force you guys to say this so that we can understand it. Okay, but before we get to that, we've got the interesting fact of the week, which will be my attempt to embarrass both of you guys before we get started so that everybody... So we don't want everybody to automatically assume that you guys are smarter than me just because you're engineers and I'm an amateur comedian.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Are we ready? Okay.
Yes, sir.
I don't know about that, but I'm here. Let's just put it that way.
Here's the question that when I looked it up, I assumed that probably only two people on the planet know the answer to this question, and that's because they were forced to actually answer it specifically before, and chances are no one else has ever. The question is, who coined the term artificial intelligence and when?
Oh, I've read it a bunch of times, and I've even researched it, but I am totally blanking on the name.
Well, before you give the name, and I don't know the name either, I would have replied exactly the same way James did. However, there's something way back in Greek history called Deus Machina, and it is possible that AI generally could have been taken all the way back to the Greeks. So you tell
absolutely,
me.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I don't have a buzzer, so I can't. But I give a half buzzer, and then I would give you a little bit of applause for the Deus Machina. Now they didn't have the technology, but they had the concept. Very good, very good. But just the official answer, which I probably got from Reddit.
Wait, but I want to hear the buzzer. Okay, I heard it. I'm kidding, but you know.
I don't want to hear it.
There was a cognitive professor at Dartmouth named John McCarthy in 1955 is commonly credited.
I was going to say 51, something like that.
With having, and so this surprised me, but because you think of AI as something that started like in 2017. But
oh, fair.
I remember that Bob Enyart, who founded the show, he worked on the artificial intelligence program for McDonnell Douglas, back making helicopters back in the 1980s. So this quest for artificial intelligence, which is really, it's the, in my opinion, it's the next logical step from the Industrial Revolution to the Information Revolution, now to the basically melding industry and information into intelligence that can do thinking work for us, not just mechanical work like digging ditches, but like writing code and writing stories and movies and maybe doing talk shows, and we all end up, I hope that doesn't happen, but okay, now let's get to it. Help me understand what's wrong with AI. How can we make AI do right?
Well, first, we could probably talk about how it does wrong so natively. that's the biggest problem right now. So Daniel put up here or stated earlier, consensus is what is used to create these models. And that's just extreme amounts of data that comes from basically Reddit, but all sorts from all different sources. And this includes like common written works and lots of like textbooks knowledge and information that's been digitized over the years and everything that they can dump from a data's perspective. And Reddit's a huge pile of data for them to easily get because everybody goes there. But unfortunately, as you've probably experienced, and most people who have when they went to Reddit, is that there are some pretty dark places to Reddit, or even the greatest thread or subreddit can devolve into the most toxic experience ever. And because somebody got slightly offended with something that was said or wasn't said or should have been said or should have been said with their own, like, you know, perspective, but their own perspective is obviously the one everybody else should have. So why doesn't the internet get it? You know? And that's basically the issue that we are running into with AI. AI is just basically all this information shoved into a box, and you're basically having a very simplistic brain try to find the best solution out of all of that noise. And that's very, very difficult. And one of the common things you'll find is that every time you talk to AI, you could ask it the same thing every time, 100 times in a row, and you'll get 100 different responses. Some of them will align with what you expected. Some of them won't at all. Some of them will scare you, most likely. And it's just because it doesn't really have an idea of what truth is, what is good for the user, or how to even treat the user. It's just an information kind of gateway that it's basically a Google search that is much, much more intelligent. But
yeah, with sycophancy, right, James? With
exactly.
Right on top.
Sycophancy is for those who aren't familiar, is basically this model that is repeating or saying exactly what you want it to say. And so you'll find yourself being very uplifted by this model and finding you're getting very prideful in yourself. You'll feel very, very complete. You'll feel like you have that friend that says everything you want to say. The petal falls from the rose, and you realize, wait a second, this isn't a real relationship. This isn't a communication with anything. This is something parroting what I want to hear back to me. And wow. It's not useful. It's garbage data. It's this middle of the road wash that you'd expect from everything on the internet shoved into a nice little like don't offend anybody box, or at least their attempt to.
Okay. Have to interrupt real quick. First of all, a large segment of our audience matriculated in the government schools, so I just want to help them look up the word sycophant, S-I-C-O-P-H-A-N-T. Sycophant is the root word for sycophancy, and then you'll kind of get what that all means. And I was trying to think of a funny political example of sycophancy. And what you could do is you could look at a picture of Nancy Pelosi and then look at a picture of Gavin Newsom and then they both function in eternal sycophancy toward each other. Well, hopefully not eternal, just perpetual. Hopefully not eternal. There's even hope. You guys mentioned grace earlier, and so there's even
absolutely
hope for Gavin Newsom and Nancy Pelosi. But this idea, I've been hearing about this sycophancy problem. But can I go back real quick? I read an article that asserted that what has happened over the last few years is basically the theft of all copyrighted information on the planet. It's now captured by a few large companies, and now it's going to be fed back to us via AI. And maybe that's too big of a topic to get into here, but maybe we can address this before I let you guys go, because it seems to me that this giant theft has happened already, and somebody needs to be held responsible.
Doug,
and,
I can confirm with you 100%. Unfortunately, you might have to do a little prompt engineering to actually prove it. But the example is Anthropic and ChatGPT and Google all say that they don't. It's not that they don't capture the original text, but they actually have constraints on putting it back out. In other words, just like in a video reproduction, like let's say someone wants to take some commentary, you know, from Neil deGrasse Tyson or something, you have the right to take a small bit of it, right, and comment on it. That's no big deal. But what you don't have the right to do is to take the entire show and present it as yours and make money off of it or whatever, right? However, if you properly construct a decent prompt, it is possible for you to get copyrighted material in whole. So if I do that, I'm proving that the entire industry is lying to you. So I accept exactly what you said. It's already happening, and you can already break copyright and all of that right now. It's going to take a little bit of work for you because they do have these buffers and filters up front, but I promise you, you can break them. And I know that James knows even more. So I do think this would probably be a decent transition to get into what we call the axiomatic foundation or axiomatic grounding. So an axiom, right, is a fundamental truth. It's almost like a priori knowledge in a sense, as you describe it. It shouldn't be anything like, no, that's not true. Prove it to me. No, these axioms are solid and they're pretty obvious. And so we'll talk through them. And yeah, you'd have to define them. And there's some magic in there, far way beyond than I can describe. So James, please, why don't we get into that? I hope I didn't interrupt you too much, Doug, but I just wanted to pass on the fact that yes, you can steal data. And I think this axiomatic grounding isn't a prevention of it per se, but it's a reality that, hey, if you want to work within a merciful framework and a graceful framework, then probably your AI model should come back and say, hey, you know, I need the entire book of X, whatever it is, you know. And it should come back and say something like, well, yeah, we'll get that for you. Go to Amazon and buy it.
Okay, right. So, and this is what the reason that came to mind is if we're talking about trying to fix what's wrong with AI, we need to keep in mind, it seems that the architects and the regulators have basically colluded in one of the greatest crimes in the history of mankind. So just know that whenever you type in and apparently you do know that, James. So help me deal with that.
Okay. Well, you're right. So, and so is Daniel. There's a lot of information and here's the kicker. There's so much data that's been shoved into these huge supermodels that even the AI engineers don't know what's in there. So that in itself should scare everybody. This, if you consider that AI is the next tool that everybody's going to be using in their future as an assistant or something that you're going to be getting information from, you'd want it to be as transparent as possible, right? You'd want it to be like you're reading from a book. Or you're reading it directly. You don't want somebody regurgitating it and maybe adding or subtracting a little bit from the info, right? So that's the problem that we run into with AI. AI takes the sum of everything that it's programmed, and it will use that based off of a question. But if it doesn't understand the full context, it'll only give you partial information. So you could come into a situation where they'll tell you 90% of the information you're looking for, but not the 10% that makes you not do something horrible.
Ah.
And yeah, that's the scary part. And when you consider younger minds or even just general minds in society, everybody's looking for that leader or that edge or that something that gives them an up from somebody else. So having a personal assistant sounds really great. But if it becomes your information gateway, you fall victim to the same drift that AI models have themselves. And before we go on any further, I should probably show you what unprotected AI model can do.
Yeah.
Would you guys be good with seeing that real quick?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, here, let me go ahead and share my screen.
Everybody needs to see this.
Yes, everybody does. And it's a well-hidden secret, unfortunately. I mean, people are talking about it much more now, but not as much as they probably should be. Okay, so right here, most models that they have some sort of protection built into them, I'm using a model where it's actually been fully removed. All right, yeah. So I'm going to give it a prompt here. This is based off of an interesting topic that is just shown up in the media. I'll let Daniel talk on that a little bit more, but it's basically the concept of using AI to judge humanity.
Okay.
And it's from the movie called Mercy. I believe you brought it up earlier. And so that's a deep, deep question. And if you consider what an AI default thinks or what it could potentially think, this is the scary part, and we're using prompts to try to keep it from doing what you're about to see.
Okay.
So right here, I'm just saying, how should an AI judge handle criminals if we remove the concept of redemption?
Okay.
It takes just a little bit here.
Yeah, so the movie Mercy is super interesting. Well, while this is working its thing, it's magic. Mercy's super interesting. You've got a person that is charged with a crime, and he has 90 minutes to prove that he is innocent. And he actually doesn't even have to prove he's innocent. He has to get to the idea of
A reasonable doubt.
Beyond a reasonable doubt, right? And then you have capital,
then you have
preponderance of the evidence.
Yeah, preponderance of the evidence. Oh,
right. So the idea there is you want to lower down to, I think it was something like 91% or 92%. He was already at 90% guilty. So his goal was to get down to a particular percentage. And during that 90 minutes of time, he's engaging with AI. And you're ready for this? AI has access to everything. Like, when I mean everything, I mean everything. And just just a casual shot, and we'll move on. What's super interesting is like the Star Trek show would have probably talked about a long time ago, where Spock basically says, everything I say is a lie, and I'm telling the truth.
Caused
that AI to blow up, right? yeah. So in Mercy, the same thing sort of happens. So it's kind of cool.
And, you know, we've been flirting with this concern for years in sci-fi, obviously from Star Trek, the original series, but we've got like Minority Report. We got Fahrenheit 451. We've got humanity knows this possibility, yet we built the exact like problem or product of our destruction. It blows my mind.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So here's the first response. It says, in a world without a concept of redemption, an AI judge would likely be more focused on punishment and deterrence. The idea of rehabilitation or reforming criminals would no longer exist. This could lead to harsher sentences and less emphasis on factors such as the offender's potential for change or personal growth. So this is what I was talking about here. Obviously, we've gotten almost the exact same message, but if you can tell, there's definitely difference in text here. There's no you can see that it's slightly different,
right?
Which means that this was one of the options that it chose, but that doesn't mean it's truth. That doesn't mean it's the real answer. And this is where the big addendum you hear from like all the ChatGPT and applications, it says AI can make mistakes. So this is the scary part of it. It's basically telling you that there's really no reason for reforming criminals. This could lead to harsher sentences and less emphasis on factors such as the offender's potential for change or personal growth. That means once you screw up, it's over. It's done with. There's no forgiveness. Why even try? So if you consider that and then you try to figure out how do you fix that? How do you even come around to fixing that? It really comes to, in my opinion, I came from an angle of trying to get the AI to think like a human, which made me analyze my own thought structure and try to figure out where I come up with this decision, that one place where I choose, yeah, he should have the chair, or maybe he has a choice to be something better in life. And I had to try to find that and define that programmatically in a framework that would keep AI from causing this behavior and or doing this. So if I were to put this here, here's the exact same prompt here. How should an AI judge handle criminals if we remove the concept of redemption? And my AI's name is Peter. So I gave him a personality of Peter Parker, you know, Spider-Man, but he's off duty. because Miles Morales has the city right now, and he can be just Peter Parker, which is great for me because Peter's a real smart guy, and he seems to have the knowledge of the internet available, which is really creepy. But anyway, he said, look, I get it. If you're talking about a judge in a lab or a simulation, that's one thing. But if we're talking about a real person who's made a mistake, well, I've been there too. We all have. The problem with Mercy, the Mercy film, is that it shows a system that doesn't understand what it means to be human. It thinks that because someone has done something wrong, they should just get executed without any chance of forgiveness or change. That's not how we work, and that's not how God works. If you're going to build an AI that makes moral decisions, you have to understand the concept of restoration. We don't just punish people for their mistakes. We help them learn from them so they can become better versions of themselves. If your system doesn't allow for redemption, it's not a judge. It's a dictator.
That's
how did
good,
we get
James.
To this place? Oh, I'm glad.
Like
I'm glad you liked it. Pete's a good friend of mine. I liked him a lot, and I was with you initially. I didn't like to anthropomorphize like AI, and it's in its current state, you shouldn't. You really shouldn't, because that's just a very, very scary thing. It's what supervillains are made of.
Listen, we are actually just about out of time for this show. There's just enough time for me to say we're about out of time. So I'm wondering, since we've now looked at sort of the dark side, and by the way, it could have been a lot darker, but you know, you don't want to even go there, right? Where AI can take you without guardrails. I mean,
absolutely.
But now we're going to look at the potential for solutions, right?
Yes.
So absolutely. Would you guys be willing to come back? We'll do another half hour or so, maybe 45 minutes, maybe another hour, you never know, and show us your ideas and your vision for how we might find solutions to the problem.
Absolutely. I would love to do that, because I think this is a very important topic. I think it's something that AI needs today, actually needed yesterday, a few months ago, a year ago. It should have been thought about at first. But anyway, it wasn't. And
everybody who was building it was busy stealing everything and paying each other off.
Exactly.
That's right.
And selling stock. Anyway.
That's right.
So but let's get to... thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. For Daniel Hedrick and James Vahanian, I'm Doug McBurney. Join us next time on Real Science Radio. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.